Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Mr. Rio.
How are you doing, Arthur?
I'm doing great. And I'm really excited about tonight's show. You know why? Number one, because it's not my show. And number two, because it's your show. And you have just been knocking yourself out, doing all sorts of research, going through garbage cans, finding stuff, putting two and two together, coming up with four. And we have got an incredible expose for tonight's show, courtesy of Mr. Bill Real.
Yeah, so let's jump into it, folks. I appreciate the introduction there, RFM. So what we have is there is a gentleman that is making the rounds in the church. So the title of tonight's show, Who is Mormon Convert? David Alexander. By the way, David, I'm pretty sure you're watching. I hope you enjoy the next hour and a half or so. So why is this important? So David Alexander joined the LDS Church only a few months ago. He's got a YouTube channel. He's already got 19,000 subscribers. We're not too far ahead of him. I mean, he's jumping right up the ranks quite quickly.
Good job.
He says he puts out multiple videos a week, sometimes two, three, four in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been making...
Go back for just a second, and yeah. I apologize for this, Bill. I just want you to notice the image of him at the top where his head is turned. You can see that his hair is not short, but it's pulled back into a ponytail very tightly. And there's only one reason I'm asking you to note that, and it's because it's a sign of something that we'll be talking about later and where he comes from.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear your point on that. That's awesome. So David Alexander has been making the rounds. He's been on a podcast that features people who come into the church, the Comeback Podcast, which is it's sponsored by the church. You've got the Quick Media, which we've talked about him several times. So he's been on their show. He's been talked about, if not on the show, for Ward Radio. Another podcast that's inside the church did a full interview with him. They called it 47-Year Search for Truth. They have Exposing the CES Letter is one of, I believe, his videos. And then he even has been asked to go and do special speaking appearances. The bottom left there, Converts Advice to Future Latter-day Saint Missionaries. And so the reason we're talking about this tonight is because this guy, in a very short time, has built a brand and has built a growing at a fast rate YouTube channel and is putting himself out there as the face of Mormon conversion. Somebody who's just joined the church recently and is just flying by the seat of his pants and everybody's excited by the things that he has to say. But there's been some rumblings out in the internet that things may not be quite as they are claimed. And so we want to talk for a moment about what David Alexander claims. If you go and watch the various videos where he's shown up, this is what he says about himself. He says he's 69 years old, born and raised in Olympia, Washington, in the United States, raised in a Catholic family, abandoned Catholicism and got involved with drugs as a teenager in the hippie counterculture movement of the 60s, became an evangelical Christian. When converted at a Pentecostal Assembly of God meeting, he knew early on there needed to be prophets and apostles, especially living prophets and apostles, that was crucial to his ability to find the true and living church. His friends were stunned that he might join the Mormon church. He is a former pastor. He spent 47 years searching through evangelical Christianity to find where there was authority, dismayed that no church lived up to the gospel, no one had authority, et cetera, et cetera. Just a few months ago in New South Wales, which is in Australia, right? That's in Australia. And he doesn't want to tell you how he got there. He says, that's a long story. I don't want to, bore you tonight with that. Well, you're not going to bore us tonight, David. we're going to share a little bit about what would happen in Australia. He decided to call for the LDS missionaries. Two young women came and presented their lessons, and bingo, he found the only true church. Nelson is a prophet of God and has the priesthood, and he is very excited about finding the one true church. So some things that we were able to find, this is his wedding announcement. David Alexander, he married I don't know what her name was, but her last name was a McNabb. And I wish the photo on the left was brighter, like the square that's cut out about the announcement, so that we could see him a little better. But there he is.
That looks like from June of 1979 in the Olympian, the Sunday Olympian newspaper.
Yep, there you go. And he portrays himself as just a run-of-the-mill, standard, former evangelical pastor. And so I found a picture of an evangelical pastor, put it up on the screen there. And obviously the head's missing, but from behind the pulpit, waist to the neck, just an ordinary Sunday church leader for another church outside of Mormonism. Doesn't seem like anything special there. And there is truth to that. He really was an evangelical pastor. So I found, and by the way, I want to say thank you. There were several people out there who helped me to locate a few things. I went looking and I asked the right people the right questions, and they gave me some information. So this is an article where some of his fellow church members, where he was an evangelical pastor, he was part of the Abundant Life Church, a denomination of the Seventh-day Baptist, not to be confused with the Seventh-day Adventist. The members of his congregation were sort of frustrated with him because the building they used for church was also a business, and he sort of seemed to be mixing the two and maybe sort of profiting a little bit off of that. And so some of the members, if you want to pause it, I'll put it up on the screen full view. You can pause the screen and you can read that.
And this was March 17th of 1993, is it?
Yeah, 95 maybe. March 17th, 1995.
Oh, 95. In the Virginia Pilot. So he was apparently a pastor in 1995 in Virginia.
Yeah. And then here's another one. Two pastors seek light during some dark days. Again, there's some negative connotations to these articles, but it does show that he was an evangelical pastor, at least in this Abundant Life Church, which I'm not very familiar. I didn't do a lot of research on them, so I'm not sure exactly where they fall on kind of a conservative liberal space in the evangelical movement, but at least we can show he was an evangelical pastor. So
by the way, that was also 1995, December.
December 23rd, Joseph Smith's birthday, it looks like. 1995
again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So we will come back to David Alexander, the Mormon convert, in a moment. But to lay the groundwork, we need to tell you about the 12 tribes cult and a man by the name of David Darush. So we'll get to him. The 12 tribes cult is... there's no other way to describe them than to use the word cult. This is a high demand fundamentalist religion to the nth degree. These guys would have the Scientologist worried. And we'll get into some of their beliefs and some of the things that they practiced and some of the crazy around them and some really horrific things too, in terms of child abuse. So I will give you a heads up. This show will deal with child abuse and will actually show some. So if that's something that's going to bother you, please, you know, change it at the appropriate time or now if you want to.
And of course, we're talking about physical abuse. We're not going to be showing any sexual abuse. It'll be brief. It'll be something that was aired elsewhere. At any rate, go ahead.
So here you've got them in a circle around some sort of symbolic structure. It's got a lot of negative things on it. The one that's facing the camera is disobedience to parents. But they're, if you go on the internet and look, there are lots of images with them doing these kinds of circles around objects. Often the objects are something different. Some of the images have them in like white outfits, sort of reminding me a little bit of a prayer circle in Mormonism. So you might see one of those perhaps as well at some point. Eugene Spriggs was their leader. He was considered an apostle or perhaps a prophet. He led them by telling them what they could do and not do. Very, very rigid belief system. We'll get to some of those in a moment. But I want to note, I think the most important thing here is to note that he would have seen himself as a prophet or at least a minimum as an apostle of Jesus Christ. But he would call him Yahshua, not Jesus.
And I think that he started this group back in 1972. And then Eugene Spriggs passed away in September of 2021. So relatively recently, which may account for certain members, I don't know, looking for greener pastures or something.
Yeah. I've never been there, but when I started researching the 12 tribes, what I learned was that the Yellow Deli restaurant franchise is owned and operated by the 12 tribes cult. If there's anybody in the audience who's been to one of these, I would really appreciate knowing what your experience was like. They're all over the country. In fact, they're all over the world. I put up a map here. Every yellow star there is a yellow deli restaurant. So they're all over the world.
It's almost like temples. They're dotting the earth.
They are. And they have a lot of practices where they sort of form into circles and raise their hands or dance around. It's sort of a, maybe a little more of kind of a Pentecostal sort of look that these folks are practicing, but nowhere near Pentecostal. The Pentecostal, the church would be considered extremely conservative compared to these guys. Here's another one. And in fact, I wanted to just make sure on down below that I've got the first video queued up. So give me 2 seconds. All right, there's that. So here's another one of them dancing. You know, here's a grown adult man with a bunch of, it looks like another grown adult woman and a bunch of female youth or children.
They dance every day. Morning, evening, they do it with prayer. Dancing is very important to them, and these circles appear to be a big part of the dancing.
Yeah. And then you've got the 12 tribes. They're called 12 tribes, but there's more than 12 of these groups. The last note I saw was 13 of them. Whenever they get big enough, they send another group of members to some other place. But there, you can see there's more than 13 circles, I think, on that map. It shows where the various 12 tribes are here. And of course, with those yellow deli restaurants all over the world, we can assume that there are decent sized groups of the 12 tribes outside of the United States as well.
Right. And I understand they not only run the restaurants, they also raise the food. These are health restaurants, right? With very healthy food, which they raise, they plant, they do everything. And it's very communal.
Yeah. And so far, probably not too much of a big deal. The one thing caught my eye here, and RFM, you talked a little bit about this in our prep for this, but as I went digging into like their periodicals, went looking for their beliefs, there was lots of overlap with Mormon themes. For instance, you see here at the bottom, the restoration of all things. There was another place where I saw a conversation about what will happen to those who don't accept the gospel in this life. And so they were sort of exploring that. They weren't doing baptism for the dead, but they were certainly searching out that issue.
But they have three places. One is for the good yellow deli people, the 10 tribes people who go to the heaven, you know, and they get to like be in charge of everything. And then they got the other people on the other end who go to hell to welter in flames forever and ever. Those are the people who rejected the yellow deli movement. And they have a third place though in between, which we would see as comparable to the terrestrial kingdom. The righteous, the people, the good people of the earth who just never got the chance to hear the message before they died. They have a separate place for them as well. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Prophets and apostles of some sort. Certainly there were racist themes in their beliefs. We'll get to some of the things that their leader said.
Similarity with Mormons.
Yeah. Anti-Semitic, homophobic. So a lot of those sort of positions as well. This is Eugene Spriggs, the man we just saw. This was their founder and, again, prophet, or at least at a minimum, apostle. It is, well, go ahead, RFM, why don't you read this one?
It is horrible that someone would rise up to abolish slavery. It's horrible that someone would rise up to abolish slavery, he says. Yeah. What a marvelous opportunity that blacks could be brought over here to be slaves so that they could be found worthy of the nations. That's an unusual take on things.
If I would have put that up there and just said, is that Brigham Young or Eugene Spriggs? You probably would have had trouble figuring it out.
No, there's a lot of overlap. You're right.
Yeah. Go ahead and read this one as well.
You have to shun anything that keeps you from being a disciple. You have to cut yourself off from it. This is why our master said, you must hate your father, mother, wife, children, and sisters.
Yeah. Again, Eugene Spriggs. A couple of things that I found, they taught that anyone who left the faith would die. I saw that in one place. And then I found another newspaper article where they actually told a person who was trying to leave the faith, walking away from it. So it said, when he finally stood up, the guy's name, his last name was Post. When he finally stood up to leave the Vermont compound, some 15 cult members blocked his path outside, forming a wall. They prayed and warned there would be consequences if he walked out of God's protection. He'd probably die. Post shook as he moved by them. So he tries to get away, and they all sort of block his path, and they tell him he's going to die if he leaves. Members take great pains to present an innocuous front to outsiders. I've heard that before. New members must give up their possessions and names, live in one of the 12 tribes, 36, so 36 worldwide communes, and follow the cult's strict rules, which former members say dictate everything from how much toilet paper a member should use, 2 sheets.
Can you spare a square?
Yeah. There's some days, man, 2 sheets is just not going to work. So to the shape of a member's eyeglasses, round, followers are encouraged to cut off all contact with the outside world. Adults considered to be out of bounds are ostracized, shamed, and cut off from the community until they repent, and leaders approve their return. Members who do wrong might also be subject of a community-wide public humiliation in which the community's leaders shame the person during a gathering.
The walk of shame.
Yeah. Some wrongs might be codified. There's another use of
the word. Codified.
Codified, yeah. Into a new teaching that is sent to all the 12 tribes communities, ex-members said. Inside the 12 tribes, sexual contact of any kind is forbidden outside of marriage. The punishment for young adults caught kissing or holding hands is marriage. Ex-members said divorce is not allowed in the cult.
That's a hell of a punishment, let me tell you. I'm speaking from experience. Marriage is the supreme punishment.
And interracial marriages are frowned on. Homosexuality is forbidden. A 1990 teaching shared with the Post, so, some sort of newspaper, calls it abominable and says gay or lesbian people must be put to death. After co-ed education was banned, enough young men experimented with bestiality that Spriggs, the cult's leader in 2006, ordered young men to kill the animals that they had had sex with. At least 30 sheep, several cows, goats, and chickens were slaughtered, Wiseman said. He estimated around 10 men and boys confessed to bestiality around that time, both in the U.S. and abroad. That's horrific psychological abuse, Wiseman said. These boys were repressed, not allowed to be normal kids, not allowed to talk to girls. And then when they confess their sins, they're made to go kill the animals. I just want to note, like, we all go gross, but recognize that that many kids in multiple geographic locations carrying out that behavior points to something deeply unhealthy in the religion that is causing that to show up. Okay.
And I note that it started occurring apparently after co-ed education was banned.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So now let me put the other screen up. And I just watched this lady in the background. This is part of their faith. I don't know what the hell she's doing, but it certainly seemed a little odd to me.
It might be a punishment.
Like, really off.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at this next one. Oh, I'll wait till you get to it. The one with the great figure. It looks like it's the figure out of Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel 2. And the stone rolling out from the mountain without hands and filling the whole earth.
Yeah, let me view slideshow.
Looks like they actually made one of those.
Right here.
Right there. I'll bet that's what that is.
Yeah, so that would be another sort of connection to Mormonism, is sort of using that to represent that you've got the truth. You're the stone cut without hands rolling down the mountain. So that's interesting. Let's see here if we can get... We already did that one. Give me a second. So I'm trying.
That lady going up and down in the deep ends.
Yep. This is view slideshow.
Now that I have my pride, we are going to defeat all of the enemies. Hey, 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 hey.
Our enemies have had dominion over us for long enough. They are no more.
Those enemies.
The enemies.
So
these guys have a lot of enemies.
That's true.
It's like the enemies are everybody who's not them.
Right. Which tends to be a tactic that high demand fundamentalist religions tend to use. So
wait a second. Look at that picture on that book. Is that Joseph Smith reading from James 1:5?
It could be, right? With his younger brothers or something sitting at his feet. What this is to represent, this was in part of the show talking about the children's education. It reminded me a lot of like fundamentalist Mormonism, like Colorado City, where the kids have a very limited education. In the 12 tribes group, The education was extremely limited. They were only allowed to read from what they called their readers and their others. There was another small group of manuals, but it was all written by the leadership of the tribe. These were things that there was four, five, six things that they could read, and that was their education. And it was very shaped around them being the true, you know, faith, and not really giving the kids a well-rounded outsider sort of education.
Because the kids are not allowed to go to public school, is that right?
Right. They don't go to public school. They are homeschooled.
They all have to be educated within the community.
Correct. So there's that. Everyone gets a new name, and that name is a Hebrew name. Now, this is the other slideshow, which did not get fixed, RFM, but if...
it's okay.
Yeah, let's see here. View slideshow. We can throw the other one up there. Hebrew name. One noted aspect of the group is its insistence on using the name Yahshua as opposed to Jesus, because the name Yahshua represents the nature of Jesus. The group similarly bestows on each member a Hebrew name that is meant to reflect the personality of the individual. So there's that. All right, let's...
Oh, what's this? And
this is where they're going to talk about everyone getting a new name.
Okay.
They didn't have warrants for every child and with their legal name on it.
Hard to do when there are no birth records and
right, but nobody knows whose name is who. Everyone goes by one Hebrew name that's given to them when they join the community. No one knows legal names.
Yeah. So now we will come back to, and by the way, that was, they were talking there about how the feds went in to try to get these children, but they couldn't figure out who was who and who belonged to who. They all had no, you know, there's no birth certificates. There's no social security cards. The kids all have these Hebrew names that have been given to them. So there's no way to track back to what they, who they are and who their parents were, who their grandparents were. And it became quite a nightmare. And I think eventually the judge, I think, ruled that they had no right to be there, the feds, and they had to leave, but the kids were sort of just left still kind of suffering some abuse that we'll get to here in a moment.
Which, by the way, is the same thing that happened when the feds got involved with the FLDS group. Mm-hmm. And I think that was in Texas when they did a raid. And yep. Then they took all the kids, and then it went in front of the court, and then all the kids, I believe, had to be returned.
Yeah, that's true. So now we're going to come sort of back to David Darush. One of their members is a man by the name of David Alexander. You guys can all see where we are going, right? David, when he joins the 12 tribes, he's given the Hebrew name of David Darush. And sometimes it's spelled David, sometimes it is David, but it is pronounced David. So I want to go here to the next. Let's see. So this is the San Diego Union Tribune. And what you're going to start to see is that David Darush, or David Alexander, is a spokesman of some sort. And he even self-labels him that on a later point. But he is the one who, whenever the news is coming to get a story, whenever something's being said on the internet, he's the guy who is out front tackling issues for the 12 tribes. And so in this, we're not here to proselytize, said member David Alexander, who sells at the Escondido Farmers Market on Tuesday and is known. And by the way, any of these errors in the wording for the next few slides, this is the editor or writer of the San Diego Union Tribune. Let's see here. Tuesdays is known to other followers by his Hebrew name, David Darush. We're here to sell produce.
And this is from October 4th, 2009. So apparently he's gone from 1995 over in Virginia with that other, what was it, Seventh-day Baptist or something?
Seventh-day Baptist, yeah.
And at some point now he's made a jump over to being a member of the 12 tribes by 2009.
Yeah, and in later articles you'll see that he has been a member of 12 tribes for decades. And so we'll sort of get, when we get towards the end, we can sort of talk about what that means when he doesn't really want to talk about it. And he imposes he's just been an evangelical Christian for 47 years. He goes, "We're Christians, but not in the modern image of Christians," Darush said. "We're Christians in faith as practiced in Acts 2 and 4. And he gets to know regular customers. Darush said he may hand out a flyer about the 12 tribes, but he's just as likely to go weeks without distributing any. The flyer comes with an explanation of the community's beliefs and an invitation to visit on Fridays with directions to the ranch.
To the ranch.
The work is shared, the money is shared, the possessions are shared, all for the sake of the movement, the flyer reads in part. In this environment, there is healing. Lives that seem damaged beyond repair are being restored in each aspect. So this is an ongoing restoration here that's happening.
I imagine that the people who do convert and join up with this group do have lives that are probably damaged beyond repair.
Yeah. Notice how he articulates his testimony of the 12 tribes. It's what I dreamed life could be like, said David Alexander about life in the 12 tribes, the Commonwealth of Israel, a Christian community where he has lived 6 years and is known by his Hebrew name, David Darush.
Is that from the same article?
Yes, same article. And then
that article was when?
Let me go back here.
It was 2000 and
2009.
So from 2003 would be 6 years.
Yeah.
So 2003 until a year ago, that would be 20 years.
Yeah. And I have a hunch that he's only speaking about being in this location because later on he refers to how long he was in the 12 tribes as much longer than that. So, so there's that. I want to note at some point here, he makes a reference because somebody's talking about how the 12 tribes are a cult. And he says one definition of a cult is a religion that hasn't been around long enough to have a university and a football team that's won the national championship. So Darush is talking about BYU and Mormonism. He's basically saying that, you know, we're considered a cult, but Mormonism, you guys don't consider Mormonism a cult anymore. I guess that's because they have a university and a football team that's won a national championship. So that's Darush. So he is familiar.
Also say, that is an answer that would do any Mormon apologist proud when responding to the same issue.
Yes. And it just, I think the point there for me is that he is familiar with Mormonism going far back. Hmm. There is, this was a critical website to the 12 tribes, but David then writes out a response. So on the front page of this article, it was Honcho David Darush is called by Diane to prove that we are wrong. So these guys are criticizing the 12 tribes. David Darush comes in and writes a letter. This is the first part. He writes that one. I'm not going to go through and read it. It's just him sticking up for the 12 tribes as a good religion that does good in the world and that he has a significant testimony of. And then here's his second letter.
Look how he starts it. Hello. Sorry, that's how he starts all his videos.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, so same thing, right? That's not all of it, though. Here's the end of it. And signed David Darush. And so there's David. But again, you know, in this nation, all things are being restored. This nation is a light by which those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death can see the true character of the invisible God and find their way out of darkness. My guess is if you went and read what he wrote while with the 12 tribes, you would see similarities between how he articulates his beliefs then versus how he articulates Mormonism. This one was interesting. It was a website that was critical of the 12 tribes, and David came in to stick up for those who stay and to sort of say like, hey, people leave, of course, you know. But here's the interesting thing. At the end, he signs it, David Darush, the internet voice of the 12 tribes. He is telling you that he has a prominent role of some sort as the public voice of the 12 tribes. This is what he does.
I wish he would spell out 12 tribes, because when he just uses the initials, he comes across as saying, David Darush, internet voice of the TT.
Yeah, and that's not as cool, is it?
No. This is almost like the TITS show.
Yeah. Here's another one. We grow like beehives, said David Alexander, a longtime member. A community reaches 40 or 50 people and splits. Man, they grow fast, don't they? Get to 40 or 50. And a character, most even the deadest of wards in the church today have plenty more than 40 or 50. A community reaches 40 or 50 people and splits. A characteristic of all the communities is that there is no difference of opinion. They believe exactly.
I wonder how that happens, that there's no difference of opinion. That sounds healthy.
Yeah. The 12 tribes does not allow different interpretations of scripture in the community. My Christian friends think I went off to
That's
the loony bin.
There's no
bin.
Difference of opinion because it's not allowed. Why couldn't I figure that out?
Yeah. Remember that David's friends thought he was crazy for getting ready to join the Mormon church. But look at this. My Christian friends think I went off to the loony bin when I joined the 12 tribes.
I think they were
confessed
both
right. Alexander, who previously served 27 years in evangelical churches. I was a pastor in Vineyard and Calvary type churches, but the Christian communities I was involved in were not living according to the way, the truth, and the life. So he's bragging about being an evangelical pastor even back then.
So Bill, this is from the San Diego Reader, and apparently he's being quoted, or at least he's being portrayed from people who talked with him, as having previously served 27 years in evangelical churches. Now, that's 27 years, and there wouldn't be any after that, apparently. Does he say now that he was a pastor for 47 years?
He says he was an evangelical Christian for 47 years, and at one time he was an evangelical pastor.
Yeah, I think he's fudging things now.
Yeah. And by the way, when you say in the past, I was an evangelical pastor, you're also saying in the here and now, I'm not. And hence, when he talks on his Mormon videos, he really wants to stay away from talking about this period of his life.
I have no idea why.
Yeah. And it's not, we haven't even gotten to the worst of it. This is just a little crazy at this point. We'll sort of get to the real crazy, which is why this tribe is so infamous for child abuse. And then I tried to find him on Reddit forums. I was able to find, this is David's Reddit account, David Alexander. He doesn't use this one anymore. He's only got like 4 comments still up there. Most of them have been removed. This is David Alexander. His wife,
Shalem was his wife.
We know that. His wife's Hebrew name was Shalem. So this is David and Shalem. So this is him and his wife. And they're talking to a person who left the faith. His name is Sinista. And I don't know if that's pronounced right, but that's what I've got here. Hi, Sinista. This is David. We lived together in Vista and also in Valley Center. So David is telling all of us and Sinista, hey, I know you. And we were together in these commune communities in at least two locations.
6 years ago, did you get this off the internet in the past week?
Yes, I got this off the internet.
So that 6 years should be 2018 when he wrote this?
Yes, we know that David was still in the 12 tribes when he was 64 years old. He says he's 69 years old today. He has only been out of this high demand fundamentalist religion for no more than 5 years.
Okay.
And maybe less. Here's the stuff I had underlined. The guy who put the post out, Sinista, I know more about the 12 tribes cult than anybody ever should. Ask me anything. Again, the self-labeled internet spokesman for the 12 tribes, right? That internet, yes. I forget what the phrase was, but he's the internet person for the 12 tribes. He is coming onto Reddit and answering back, refuting what's that?
Can I read this part?
Oh, please.
I'm really excited. Hi, yeah. Sinista. This is David. So Sinista comes onto the Reddit forum for cults, says, basically, ask me anything. I know more about the 12 tribes cult than anybody ever should. Ask me anything. Here comes David, the spokesperson. Hi, Sinista. This is David. We lived together in Vista and also in Valley Center. As far as I know, my own heart, my wife and I loved you. We still do. I can relate to a lot of your struggles. I myself left at one point in 2008. I was away for a day. And during that day, I called a friend who had visited the communities a lot, but never joined. I told him I had left. And his response was, what did you do that for? Those people love one another. I was like, wow, that's right. They do love one another. And I came back later that day, been here ever since. 15 years now. My wife for 25, we married 13 years ago. People can say whatever they want, for sure. Obviously, apparently not the same wife as in the 1979 article you showed. For sure. We are very faulty, and our leaders are faulty also. But I know this, we do love one another. We do our best to deny ourselves and live for each other instead of for ourselves, to lay down our lives for our friends. We do it faultily. For sure. And we do it very badly at times, but we at least are trying to love one another. To me, that's a miracle. I personally don't know of any place else where such a thing is happening. If I did, I might go check it out. But I don't. And I didn't just fall off the turnip truck. No, why would anybody think that about David Darouche? I am an old hippie, child of the 60s, 64 years old, 6 years ago. Okay. And I love where I live. I love the 12 tribes communities. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. Wild horses couldn't drag me away. Mm. And I could leave tomorrow if I wanted and live fine anywhere on earth. I am skilled at small business startups and could create a job for myself anywhere I wanted to be. But what keeps me here is simply that this is where I am free to not think about myself or about meeting my own needs, but have the freedom to live completely for my friends and still have my needs met by the love of my friends without any self-seeking needed. That brings the peace that surpasses all understanding. So sorry you didn't hang in there with us, loser. You are missed. For sure, we always loved you. Faultily, for sure. But we loved you. Much love, David.
Yeah, his testimony seems pretty secure in the 12 tribes. He speaks of it as the thing that is so beautiful, brings peace that surpasses all understanding, and nothing could drag him away.
His over the top kind of how great this is. His effluence. I think that's the word. His effluence. His over the top. This is so great about the 12 tribes is something that I see in all of his videos about the Mormon church. Now, no matter what he's a part of, he's this guy about that group. Maven.
Yeah, we've got some clips coming up from that. Can you guys hear me okay? Is my sound coming through?
Yeah.
Okay. What stood out to me just from this little exchange here, besides what, you know, others have seen it too. I think maybe I'll pull up a couple. The He Came Back podcast, I also thought of that, where he's like, I also left, but I came back. Instead of being on the Mormon one, he should have been on a 12 tribes one. Here the excuse about, you know, faulty leaders, men are just men, right? But the thing that actually was most interesting to me is this narrative that I felt like I had a lot as a believing Mormon as well, is that we're really well regarded by other people. So when he's saying that he left and that he talked with a friend who visited but never joined, and, you know, has this response of like, why would you leave them? Why would you do that for? Like, they're really loving, caring people. So he's like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to go back. It's like, why hasn't that person joined then? It's just that kind of narrative. We have those stories in Mormonism.
I bet it was Rabbi Joe.
No, but anyway, no, I like Rabbi Joe, and hopefully we'll have him on again soon.
I love Rabbi Joe.
That was my bit.
Who doesn't like Rabbi Joe? I bet the 12 tribes don't like Rabbi Joe. You know why? Because he's a rabbi.
No. RFM and I, since we served missions, and then maybe RFM is different because he was a convert, and maybe as a lifelong member, I just don't quite have the enthusiasm that converts do. But at least for me, I was enthusiastic about the church. I wanted to serve a mission. And that's, you know, when I went, it was still kind of stigmatized for sisters to go. You had to be unlovable enough to get to 21 without being married to be able to do it. But yeah, anyway, I just was never this effervescent when it came to describing the gospel and proselytizing. And so, it's just something that's really eerie to listen to, honestly, on this side of things. But as a missionary, I would have admired it, and I would have felt bad that I couldn't talk and act the way he did about the gospel. I would see something like this and be like, that's how I should be.
Some serious 12 tribe zeal going on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
RFM, will you read the red underlined section? So, and I just want to note, he responds to Sinista multiple times. There's four, five responses. I don't know how many of them we've got here, but this is the second one.
You say, this is once again, David and Shalem, David Alexander, to Sinista. You say that most of whom have gotten sucked into it and are simply delusional. Apparently he's quoting Sinista about what he said about the members of the 12 tribes, but doing the best they can. Yes, it is a harsh life. And yes, you do give all that you can give. Sinista, I don't see it that way. I don't think I or my wife or most of my friends have gotten sucked into it, nor do I believe I or my wife or my friends are delusional. Yeah, when was the last person you met who was delusional who said, hey, I think I'm delusional? Far from it. I know for a fact that I live with the most cognitive, real, and down-to-earth people I have ever known in my 64 years on this planet. We love our life. We find life, just as our master Yeshua said we would, in denying ourselves to lay down our lives for our friends. He said that twice. I'm not exactly sure what it means. It sounds
what greater familiar. Love can a man have than to lay down his life for his friends?
Yeah. I hope he's speaking euphemistically. He said there is no greater love than that. And nothing satisfies, truly satisfies the human soul more than that greatest love. I consider, honestly, the life we have to be the most amazing, abundant, and satisfying life that can be found anywhere on earth. And for sure, I am telling you honestly, Sinista, if I could be anywhere else on the planet doing anything else with anyone else, I would choose right at this moment to be right where I am doing exactly what I am doing with the wonderful covenant friends that I am doing it with.
This guy had a testimony of the 12 tribes like very few members of the 12 tribes probably had. This guy has got a ton of zeal.
This guy is never going to fall away from the 12 tribes. I can tell
it'd be impossible. Nope, that couldn't happen. Here's another one. Don't be taken aback by the loud, joyful music and dancing or the children who seem to be more obedient, social, smart, and talented than any other children you've ever met. You know, it's the 11th and a half hour. These
I wonder
ones
why they're
saved.
So obedient.
Yeah, we'll get to that. It is just because they are spanked regularly and have a ton of pressure on them all the time. I just find it funny. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Oh, wait, that looks like a quote. Is he quoting Sinista?
Yeah, he must be.
Okay.
Yeah, so Sinista must have said, don't be taken aback by the loud, joyful music and dancing of the children who seem to be more obedient, social, smart, and talented than the other children you've ever met. It is just because they are spanked regularly and have a ton of pressure on them all the time. And then David says, I just find it funny that even as an ex-member who left us and who thinks we are a bunch of delusional fools, that somehow you still love and respect. You can't help but admit that our children seem to be more obedient, social, smart, and talented than any other children you've ever met. And you think that this can just be disregarded because we discipline them and have a ton of pressure on them. The reality is a ton of pressure just makes children totally haywire and crazy. It doesn't produce children who are obedient, social, smart, and talented. Only a ton of love and care can produce children such as you admit our children to be. And our master Yahshua said plainly, wisdom is proven right by her children. All the best, David. So let's spend a moment talking about the discipline in this tribe. I show you a picture here of balloon sticks because their discipline manual refers to these small rods that they punish the children with, and they call them similar to balloon sticks.
So it's a switch.
Yeah, it's a plastic switch. Take off the little circle thing on the end and take that stick and then smack the back of the legs, the bottom of the feet, the palms of the hands, the buttocks, and any other place that these people decided to hit. This is part of their manual, discipline, spanking too lightly. If you spank your child too lightly, what does it produce? It produces the negative result of strengthened rebellion, and they will never know that you love them, okay? You want to read this one, RFM?
Eugene Spriggs, from the cradle to the grave, you must discipline your children. From the age of 6 months, you would start from the age of 6 months. You would start disciplining them with a rod on the palm of their hands?
Yeah. Eugene Spriggs, prophet, seer, and revelator. How about this one, RFM?
While this corporal, is this still him?
This is not him. This is a note about them moving for the reason that their abuse was too significant.
Okay, it says, while corporal punishment is not illegal in the United States, it is prohibited by law in Germany. They had a group there, 12 tribes group in Germany. Shortly after the release of this video, the German 12 tribes sect moved to the Czech Republic where corporal punishment is permitted.
Yeah. So here's some of the quotes that I found around the kids who had been abused and growing up and then now speaking as adults. I was under no circumstances going to beat my kids the way I was beaten, said former member who left in his 30s and spoke to the Post on condition of anonymity to protect family members still in the cult. I just could not do it. And you have to if you are there. If you are not beating your kids, you are going to be in big trouble. The expectation is this is what we do. We beat our children into obedience. The 12 tribes taught that it was different from false religions like mainstream Christianity because their children would follow them, he said. But the 12 tribes' children fled in droves, sort of like the kids out of some of the polygamous groups and other places where high-demand religion often does abuse children. Those kids tend to grow up and get as far away from that as they can. And now as adults, still working through the trauma of their childhoods, they worry for the kids caught inside. When a toddler throws a tantrum in the 12 tribes, an adult might grab the girl, hold her tight on his lap, perhaps by throwing his leg over hers, restrain both her arms, and put his hand over her mouth until she stops fighting back. The toddler might scream and cry and struggle for an hour. She will not be freed until she surrenders, former members said. The idea is to break her will. Kids were supposed to be quiet, and when they weren't, physical restraint over their bodies and mouths were expected, said ex-member Jason Wolf. His brother, a leader in the 12 tribes, previously lived in
Manitou,
and their father helped establish the Boulder community. Wolf left the group in 2009, now lives in Virginia. He was six when his parents joined. You read the next three.
Restraint is part of the 12 tribes' overall approach to child rearing, which focuses heavily on physical discipline. The 12 tribes teaches that children must be spanked with thin, flexible, wooden rods, a practice the group has been consistently criticized for, but has steadfastly defended, saying it is rooted in biblical principles. Well, I wonder what on earth they're referring to there. Probably spare the rod and spoil the child. Ex-members who grew up in the 12 tribes described being spanked on their bare bottoms, on their hands, and on the bottoms of their feet for the slightest perceived offenses. It was not uncommon for parents to spank their child 20 or 30 times each day. We were basically beaten down into absolutely nothing so that they could build you up into what they wanted you to be. Asking for seconds at breakfast could get you a spanking, Anderson said. Adults in the cult were taught to discipline on the first command. I can't hear you right now, Bill.
Sorry, I was reading the quote here, a backyard professor. I wonder what they would think if Exmos claimed we beat our children out of the church. Here's another page of this. Offenses that warrant spanking might vary from community to community or even from family to family, but there is tremendous social pressure to discipline harshly, ex-members said. Cult members meet once every morning and once every evening for mandatory gatherings, worship sessions at which leaders preach. They can be tedious and long. I'm thinking like Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon in the Kirtland Temple, right? For hours on end. And then you're thought of as not, tedious and long, and children are expected to listen without fidgeting. If you don't take your child out and spank them during the teachings, then you're thought of as not being a good parent, right? Everybody, when the leader's giving a talk and a child gets a little noisy, everyone in the community expects you to take that kid away from the crowd and to discipline them with physical abuse to quiet them. Let's see here. People tapped me on the back when I had a 2-year-old son and said, "Your son is not listening." Then if I don't take him out and spank him, I'm not receiving. The ex-member who left in his 30s remembered a practice called scourging, in which a child was stripped naked and beaten with a rod from head to toe. Post, and this is that same post from earlier, Post and others said adults routinely withheld food from children as a form of discipline, sometimes for days at a time. When Anderson was 6 or 7, she was locked in a dark basement as punishment for taking from the refrigerator. The one time I was locked in the dungeon, it wasn't a real dungeon, but it felt like it. I think I was in there for more than a day because we fasted every Friday. So I was used to starving and it was longer than that. Oop, let me go back up. For many years in the 12 tribes, physical discipline could be meted out by any adult on any child for any reason. Former members said Anderson was disciplined for wearing her ponytail too high and for looking around, not at her feet when she walked. Sometimes a man accused of sexual abuse will be kicked out of the cult, ex-member said, but sometimes he'll be forgiven and allowed to stay. Where have we heard that story before?
This guy has come home.
Yeah. How a case is handled often depends on how much status the abuser has within the cult. Frequently, children who report sexual abuse are not believed. Some are punished or told that the abuse was their fault. Quotes. Here's four more. Will you read these ones, RFM?
Yes, certainly. In a 12 tribes leadership meeting sometime around 2011. By the way, where are you getting all these quotes from that we're reading, Bell?
All the sources will be in the end here. I can put them up on the screen, but they'll also be in the show notes. Soon as we end our show, I'll copy and paste them to the YouTube video, and they'll be in the podcast audio notes as well. But there's about seven or eight places. Four or five of them are newspaper articles or blog posts where ex-members are being spoken to about the abuse that they suffered.
And to be clear, when I say, man, this guy's coming home, I'm referring, of course, to David Alexander, who's left this group to become a Mormon.
Right.
In a 12 tribes leadership meeting sometime around 2011, Wiseman asked why a particular case of alleged child sexual abuse, wasn't reported to outside authorities. Leaders told Wiseman that the girl's father didn't want to testify in court, Wiseman said. He later followed up with the father, who said he was willing to work with law enforcement, but that a 12 tribes leader told him not to testify because it would shame our master's name. That'd be Jesus's name. That'd be Yeshua's name, Wiseman said, adding that the 12 tribes kicked out the accused abuser. It's been sustained, spanning multiple eras in the 12 tribes, and they bury it. The member who left in his 30s said, they don't advocate for the kids who are abused. They're much more interested in their image than they are in protecting children.
Protect the good name of the church.
The rod is used on the buttocks. The objective of discipline is not to cause pain, stripes, that would be the marks, I assume, tears or sorrow, but to bring the rebellious child's will under control.
This quote is from their manual.
Okay, thank you. And that's why it's full of things that aren't necessarily consistent with what we read before about where kids are spanked. Yeah, and try and make it sound like a good thing. Yeah, the objective is not to cause pain, stripes, tears, or sorrow. It just brings that. It's not the objective, but right. It does it anyway. But to bring the rebellious child's will under control. It does not break a child's spirit to force him to obey. It causes him to choose obedience over rebellion. God's word commands that children are to obey their parents. It is the child who chooses to break God's law, apparently starting as early as 6 months.
And then I just noted the same thing you did. In other words, while it is painful, it does cause stripes and sorrow and tears. They're just saying such is not the motive.
Mm-hmm. To control a child means to use the force necessary to cause him or her to follow your directions.
Yeah. And then this is their manual, and I'm actually going to click this, and we can open it up. Their manual on child, this is their manual on child discipline, 348 pages. And those are all the chapters, what discipline is not, controlling and teaching, children's judgment meeting, discipline on the first command, about children over 10 years age, training up children in the way they should go, the soul's authority regarding the children. Authority, 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 authority. Lots of chapters on authority.
They seem to be extremely involved and interested in disciplining children.
As much abuse as occurs in Mormonism, I couldn't imagine Mormonism writing a 348-page manual on how to discipline children. So that's their manual. Let me get rid of that. Okay, so... Next up here, instructions in the manual. Children as young as 6 months old should be spanked if they say wiggle away from a diaper change.
Okay, I'm sorry. Bill Real.
Yeah.
This is in their manual where it says children as young as 6 months should be spanked. Okay, just wanted to see if that was correct.
Yep. The pain received from the balloon stick is more humbling than harmful, the manual reads. There is no defense against it. The only way to stop the sting of the rod is to submit. This is exactly what the child will do. Submit to his parents. Teach them to respect all authority. Once you've sided with your child against authority, you've ruined them. If you side with your child, you have messed up and violated your loyalty to the tribe. Discipline children for all disrespectful attitudes. Don't allow your children to complain. Train your child to submit willingly to his discipline. Make sure he bends over submissively. Guilt will not be removed unless he submits willingly. Now, here's the kicker. This one will become very important as we get into one of
something else, Bill.
Yeah, please.
Because a theological component just got added to that, talking about that the guilt of the child has to be removed through the corporal punishment.
Yeah,
and the guilt will not be removed from the child unless he submits willingly.
Right. Part of the repentance process is to get beat. This last part here, this will become crucial as we get into a future slide, not too far away, maybe even the next one, but at least really quickly here. The Hebrew word translated rod, shebet, in Old Testament concerning chastisement of children is a symbol of God's delegated authority, delegated to his people to use for the purpose of training his children. The rod represents the right of rulership for parents and nations. When the authority of a legitimate ruler is challenged, the rod and reproof are to be used to inflict pain sufficient to end the rebellion. The rod is a thin stick, like a balloon stick, used on a rebellious child by his parents, and then lots of scriptures to justify it. So we actually have, well, you're muted, RFM.
I was going to say, you said, I'm sure there's a lot of mention of balloon sticks in the Old Testament.
Yeah. So the next video, Maven put a little content warning in so we knew what was coming next. This is actually recorded footage of them disciplining one of the children. Let me turn the sound on.
Beyond accounts and reports, people saw it on tape.
So there is somebody hitting their child, and it looked like maybe on the back of the legs. I'm not sure if that was the butt or not, but it seemed like it was a little lower. So there's that. Now let me go.
And Richard Beckjack is making a comment. No wonder he has 17,000 subscribers. I just want to make sure it's clear and that we keep this understanding going, that this is the cult that David Alexander was a member of, a spokesperson for, an advocate for, who has just left that cult within maybe a year, possibly five, but I think about a year ago, joined the Mormon Church, and now is saying the exact same wonderful and glorious things about the Mormon Church and its leaders as he was saying about the 12 tribes and its leaders.
Yeah, and so we're back to the San Diego Union Tribune, Valley Center, 12 Tribes Christian Community Lives as an Example of Its Faith, and the article goes into some of the reports of child abuse coming out. DeRouche said he used to live with the New York group that was fined for child labor violations. Conditions there were far from the images of forced assembly line work often associated with such violations. Again, this is the editor of the paper. This isn't us. He said, adding that the workplace is an opportunity for parents to teach their children skills and discipline.
Just going back there for a second, Bill, I think you caught it. What they're quoting is David Alexander, a.k.a. David DeRouche.
David DeRouche.
He is justifying and defending what was going on in New York when it was fined. The 12 Tribes group there was fined for child labor violations. And it was David Alexander who said that conditions there were far from the images of forced assembly line work often associated with such violations.
Correct. He continues, David DeRouche, David Alexander, I learned how to work alongside my father, he said, comparing the farm with his own childhood experience. Our children, when they're not in the homeschool, by the way, I don't think he was a member of this when he was a kid, so I don't know the connection there, but and this isn't as important as the last sentence we'll get to here. Our children, when they're not in homeschool, are with us, working with us, but not doing anything unreasonable. The ranch, he said, was like a family farm, such as pulling weeds or milking goats. Now, here we go. Asked about the UK newspaper that referred to members beating children with resin-soaked rods, DeRouche's brow furrowed at the unusual description. Here is David Alexander, David DeRouche, essentially quoting almost verbatim the manual that we just read. We use a little rod about 3/16 inch in diameter, he said. It's like a balloon stick. We discipline with love. We don't have any intention of hurting the children. Now, you saw that last lady whipping the kid. Do you think she had any intention of hurting the child? It sure as hell looked like it.
Of course, your intention is to hurt the child because that's the only way you're going to break their spirit and get them to comply.
It's what the manual says. I don't care what you
say, David Alexander. Your intent is to hurt them to get them to do what you want them to do.
Yeah, and he acts like they're not really doing child labor. It's more of like we're teaching these kids to work hard. Maven, do you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I just realized my laptop wasn't plugged in. But even if the intent was not to hurt children, it doesn't matter if, you know, it's the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You're still abusing them, even if you didn't mean to, even if we take that at face value. It's still very disturbing and very wrong.
Yeah. So here you can sort of see a little bit of footage they got from some of these kids who are in mandatory work environments. They sort of work by themselves. There aren't that many adults around. The kids kind of have their thing to do.
The children in the 12 tribes are put to work from a very young age. Tessa remembers being sent out to work on her own when she was just 5 years old.
Sometimes working in kitchens, like preparing food for the whole rest of the community, or in like candle factories. So I remember being like 4 or 5 years old working with this boiling wax, like dipping things into it and making candles just completely alone.
My dad said put one there.
Questions over the 12 tribes' treatment of children have been raised around the world.
They're packaging high-end lotions and skincare products for brands like Acure and Savannah Bee.
Last year, a U.S. television hidden camera investigation filmed the children of the 12 tribes being forced to work in a factory assembly line.
How old are you?
You tell her.
10.
And a six-year-old boy being put to work on their farm.
Picking potatoes and trying his best to handle a wheelbarrow.
Oh, no.
So you can see that they make children at a very young age do mandatory work.
Boiling wax?
Yeah, boiling wax, dipping the candles, the string in to build the candle up. Yeah. Yeah. So again, David has always known that God's church should have apostles and prophets. Well, of course, that's what his previous church had.
He just has trouble identifying them.
Ed Wiseman, generally considered the group's second in command to founder and apostle Eugene Elbert Spriggs.
Jesus Christ himself established that, and he gave authority to the church to be that light.
The word is clear that you have to obey what you believe and surrender your life to obedience to the word of God.
Okay, so now we get to the part, how do we know that these two men are one in the same?
Is that Alexander, David DeRouche and David Alexander?
The David Alexander who was David DeRouche in the 12 tribes and the David Alexander who is the Mormon convert making the circuit tour and creating a vibrant YouTube channel.
Got it.
Remember those Reddit posts earlier, RFM Red from Sinista Colucci and David and Shalem, which is David Alexander, David DeRouche. I reached out to Sinista and said, hey, this David guy got into a conversation with you. And I sent him a picture of our David Alexander.
That so picture, you did this yourself.
Yeah, I reached out
located to that Sinista guy
mm-hmm.
who obviously knows David because David says we know each other. And you sent him a picture of David Alexander, our guy.
Yep, I sent our guy, really? David Alexander, to Sinista, and Sinista's written a book. You can go find it on Amazon. Better Than a Turkish Prison, What I Learned from Life in a Religious Cult, Sinista Colucci. So the same guy.
Great.
I said, Sinista, my name's Bill Real, and we're doing an expose on David Alexander, David DeRouche from the 12 Tribes Cult. In Reddit post, a David who appears to be DeRouche reached out to you to combat your criticism. Did you know David DeRouche, David Alexander, and could you identify him in an image? And I sent him that picture. He said, laugh out loud. Yes, I lived with him for many years, and that image is definitely him. He's bonkers. I said, we're doing an expose on him Wednesday. Any additional info would be much appreciated. He said, I love how with every religious movement he gets involved in, he has an equally zealous conviction that he has found the truth and sets out to gain as many converts as he can. I think with him, it's more of a trip and not so much a truth-seeking journey. And we'll get to that in a moment.
Power trip?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anything at all. Also, I will share the link. If you are able, your participation in the live chat would be so helpful. Sinista goes on. He said he told me a bit about his involvement with a religious group in Washington State. Of course, this was decades ago, so I'm not clear on the details, but I know he had elevated himself to a leadership position within that group. This was before the 12 tribes. That's all I know. Not interested in the interview, but feel free to quote me and mention my book if you'd like. Good luck. Oop, sorry. I said, didn't want to interview you, but rather have you share your thoughts in the live chat or YouTube comments. And I said, book, what book? And that's when he pointed me to this. He said, it's called Better Than Turkish Prison, What I Learned from Life in a Religious Cult. He said, when I lived with David, he was the head evangelist for one of the tribes. So basically in charge of recruiting new converts on the West Coast. He'd organize events and talk to people. He made some YouTube videos. Nothing major. He definitely wasn't that high up in the chain of command. So he was high up, maybe middle kind of leadership in one of the tribes in a location, not the collective 12 tribes. So there's that. So there's witness number one, that this guy is our David Alexander. This is the...
Hey, wait a second. Individual Entertainment is in the live chat. Is this our friend Sinista? He says, anyone pre-ordering my book gets a free limited edition autographed copy.
Look at that. Nice. So that must be Sinista. Sinista, by the way, thank you very much for helping us put sort of one of the final nails in the coffin to know that David Alexander, our Mormon convert, is this David Alexander who justifies and excuses child abuse and discipline to a child with balloons, with a stick similar to a balloon stick. So this is the 12 Tribes YouTube channel. They don't do that great. 12 Tribes Media, 914 subscribers. Sinista, notice his comment at the bottom. They took all his videos down when he left the community. The YouTube channel is called 12 Tribes Media. So I went looking for videos with David Alexander, and they were all removed off of the 12 Tribes YouTube channel when he left their group.
Do we know when he left the group?
I don't. Other than we know he was...
Let us know in the live chat.
That'd be awesome.
When did he leave the group?
Yep. And at the very least, we know he was still in it when he was 64 years old, and today he claims to be 69 years old. But my point is, this guy was one of their YouTube video creators then. So, of course, he comes into Mormonism, and what does he do? He starts a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. This is just more of the same. Then... we found an article. It takes a community, why she didn't fly. This is one of their free press 12 tribes things they put out, special double issue. And there's an article called My Search for a Holy People. And it's a, you know, relatively long article. There's page 2 and 3 of the article. And here's page 4. And look what we find. This is David Alexander. Now, I decided to try to find our David Alexander in a similar pose.
Okay, yes. So this is David Alexander when he was writing and in love with and a full-fledged member of the 12 Tribes group. That's his signature, David, writing an article about how great the 12 Tribes is with a picture of him at the end of it. Do I have that correct?
That you got it. And that's his signature. Now, what we could do is prior, because he might change his signature now. But if we go back in time, no, because I put the both of them next to each other and it becomes pretty clear. High cheekbones, the shape of the mouth. We've got the same guy. I was going to flip the image so his head was tilted to the same direction. I decided not to because I didn't want somebody to go like, no, that guy's got a cleft on the other side and this one's got a on the other. You know, I wanted it to be consistent. So there is David.
I think we have a positive ID, detective.
Yeah. So there's David Darush. Of the 12 tribes.
Incredible. The guy who's saying that he was an evangelical pastor for 47 years.
Yeah. And we should just note that for a moment. He does not, in every one of his conversations, he avoids like the plague talking about being in the 12 tribes. And we'll get to one of those moments where he's asked directly if he was in it. And he goes on a multi-minute tirade and never really fully addresses the question.
Because can I say something that's obvious here for a second? Yeah, it's kind of my stock in trade is saying obvious things. If a guy who's been an evangelical pastor for 47 years leaves that behind to join Mormonism, That's a huge win for Mormons. They're going to love this guy. They're going to celebrate him. They're going to fet him. But on the other hand, if you got a guy who's just been a cult hopper for 47 years, and he's been a member of the 12 tribes cult with all this baggage, and he converts to Mormonism, not so much. That's not going to be looked at as such a great thing. I mean, it's wonderful that everybody joins Mormonism because it's a true church, but he's not going to be getting this kind of attention if he is not flying under a false flag about being an evangelical pastor for 47 years.
Yeah. Amen. All right. So we'll go to a couple of videos here where he...
Do you think he's watching yet, Bill?
Oh, I know he's watching.
Okay.
He has to be.
Hello, David.
So I want to note here, this is the beginning of a video where he is directly asked if he was in the 12 tribes. Hmm. This is the intro to the video. Notice how he wants to avoid the question and act like he, you know, I just didn't think it was important to tell anybody this. I didn't think it was a big deal to go into all of the churches that I belong to. He is, right now, he is manipulating the audience and bullshitting them, and you can see it.
Can I say something before you start playing it?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so I'm not an evangelical Christian and never have been. I don't think Bill is one, and nor has he ever been one to my knowledge. But there's a bunch of evangelical Christians out there who are kind of chapped that this fellow is claiming to have been an evangelical Christian minister, pastor for the last 47 years when he has not been, and that bothers them for that reason. I don't really care about that as much as the evangelicals do, but I can understand why it is that they take issue with it.
Yeah.
This comment now that's being addressed to him is from one of those evangelical Christians who's taking issue with him and saying, why are you calling yourself an evangelical pastor when actually you were with the 12 tribes? Isn't that true? Yeah. And now he spends the next 6 or 7 minutes not answering the question.
Yeah. Once you know how long he spent in the 12 tribes, once you know the prominent role in terms of addressing critics on the internet and in newspapers that he held within that entity, and also now knowing the amount of support he gave to their manual on child discipline, reiterating that it was perfectly appropriate to beat children with balloon sticks, now you start to see why he answers the question the way he does right here.
I never have thought that it was worth it for me to get into the details of my evangelical Christian background. I was an evangelical Christian.
It's not really important to get into it. I never thought it was a big deal. I never thought it was a big deal to tell people I was in a cult for 2 decades. I never thought it was a big deal to tell people that I was sort of a spokesman for them on the internet and in newspapers. I never thought it was a big deal to tell people that I was fully in support of the child abuse tactics that this cult carried out and was infamous for in newspapers and other places for the child abuse that happened in the 12 tribes across their 36 communal compounds.
And I've seen newspaper articles from different years of raids by the government officials to try and rescue these children in Vermont, another one in New York, and another one in Australia, South Wales. And I doubt that's all of them.
Okay, and then this is the next. Now, this is a little bit of a long one. He now tackles the question directly. I want you to notice how he loses his cool, how irate he gets. And notice how he sort of tries to deflect and obfuscate, but he sort of senses he never really answers it, and he sort of has to come around to it at the end.
On the video about exposing the Mormon Stories clone, Mormon Discussions video, Mr. Dave KC posted this. Since we're exposing things, I've come to understand that your background is that you were raised Roman Catholic. At some point, we're then Seventh-day Baptist. And then you were involved in the 12 Tribes Church before converting to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Would that be correct? I think it would be interesting to know, since basically all evangelicals would consider the 12 tribes to not be evangelical at all. There's an article from the San Diego Tribune from 2009 that reportedly has you with the 12 tribes group in Maine and acknowledges your name, David Alexander, but also you were going by the name David DeRouche. Would that be correct that it's your background? If so.
I just want to note, he laughs it off so that his audience perceives that this is not to be taken seriously. But the guy is telling the truth to him about where he belonged and what his role was.
He's reading from some of the sources we've covered tonight.
Yeah.
And we know it's he because we got the photographic evidence. Now, yeah. Why doesn't he just say, yeah, it's true? Because it is.
Yeah, because he's embarrassed about what it would mean to tell the full story.
I think it would be best to not say you were an evangelical, since 12 Tribes is considered by most evangelicals as not evangelical and not recognized as being in the doctrinal range of Orthodox evangelicalism. Oh, God. That's... Whew. Do you know what was the name of this fellow? His name's Dave. Oh, another Dave. Okay. You'd make a really good stand-up comedian.
Just answer the question.
You really would, Dave. What you say is, it's so ridiculous. I can hardly respond to you with a straight face.
You should respond with a straight
face. But I'm going to try.
It's a yes or no question.
You know, stuff like this. I deleted his post. Somebody else put another. So I answered it. And I left it on there, but I've like made it my own comment. And so it's floating around there if you want to read it on the comments section.
Please answer the question. Video.
But I mean, somehow Dave thinks I'm going to be ashamed of this, or somehow that I'm going to admit that I've been exposed of lying about being an evangelical. Oh, gosh. I don't know. You know, these people must have time on their hands to be digging around in the trash of my 47-year history as an evangelical, trying to ferret out the truth about me.
At least he admits it's trash.
It's, you know, if I seem over the top happy, it's because this stuff wouldn't be happening if I wasn't having a really significant effect. Yes, yes, yes. Coming at you, Dave. Coming at you, Jeff. It's not going to stop either. You know, see, I already know I'm a loser. But Heavenly Father has taken this loser and put him on the covenant path and made me a son and made me part of his people. So my lifetime of loserhood really doesn't matter anymore. You know, I am a child of God and he has sent me here. You know, I got a brand new heart and a brand new start. And I actually got the Holy Ghost in my soul as my constant companion after 47 years of it not happening in your evangelical Christianity. And
unhinged.
I live in a van. How are you going to knock me down, man? There's nothing to knock down. I'm not a tall poppy. How do you tear down somebody that's already all the way down? That's, by the way, that's why I'm so joyful. You know, the water, the Holy Ghost is likened to water in the Word of God. Where does water flow? The joy of God is like the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is the spirit of joy, and it's like water. Where does it flow? Water flows to the lowest place. It's always heading down. You want the joy? You just get all the way down. And I'm all the way down. I'm sure if I can get lower, I hope somebody helps me get lower, because that's where the glory is, okay? So, you know, this is the thing about evangelical Christianity. Like, people like Jeff Durbin are trying to pretend to themselves and the whole world that they're God's man of faith and power, and that they're happening, and that, you know, they're the arbiter of truth, and that they're handing down their Calvinist total depravity of man, unconditional election, limited atonement, you know, all this different stuff. They're handing this stuff down from the mountain, and they actually know the truth, and they're just so full of it, it's ridiculous, and they're just so up on their high horse. But I'm not up on my high horse, man. I'm right down. I'm groveling in the dirt already. So I'm pretty invulnerable. I'm sorry.
I haven't forgotten the question yet. Have you, Bill? I
have all my fellow saints praying for me like Julie Onefeather. And I actually have the power and authority to speak and act for God. I'm a Melchizedek priest. My priesthood line goes all the way back to the Lord Jesus Christ.
And so does mine.
Nobody can take that from me, man. You can't take
away. They can. I mean, they might. Now,
I have the power to speak and act for God in the power of the Holy Ghost, and you don't. You know, this is just the way it is, bro. So you're going to have to deal with it. And attacking me isn't going to get you anywhere. You're
only why is that an attack? Why does he characterize that as an attack when it's just the truth?
Restoration and coming to the true church of Jesus Christ in these last days, because it's the only place on earth where there's a real foundation to stand as we head into days that are going to be greater tribulation than the world has ever seen and ever will see again. And there's not, it's the only ark on earth. The world is being flooded with darkness, and deep darkness is covering the whole earth and the people. And the Church of Jesus Christ is the only ark. So this is your only hope, Dave. It's your only hope, Jeff.
He never really does. Even when he is answering whether he was in the 12 tribes, he goes back to, this is ridiculous. They want to say I wasn't an evangelical pastor. He never wants to tackle the question head on. And you can see why, now that we've shown all the abuse that was prevalent there, you can see why this guy does not want to have his audience understand clearly in a transparent way what it was he was involved in and what it was he advocated when he was a member of that group.
Can I make my position clear before we play this next clip?
Yeah.
Okay. Because if a person wants to try and find the truth, and that's important to them in a religious sense, and they go one place, they think they found it, they realize they didn't find it, but they gave it their best shot. They want to try something else. And they do that, and they spend their life doing that, sort of like a modern day Martin Harris, this guy is. I've got no problem with that. In some ways, it might be, I don't know, admirable from a certain perspective. But the only problem I have is with a guy joining Mormonism under the false story that he was an evangelical pastor for 47 years, when actually all he was a cult hopper from 12 tribes and who knows what else, but most recently probably the 12 tribes. And he knows it's so problematic that when he's asked the question directly, he spends 7 minutes not answering the question, but characterizing the question itself as an attack on him. This is why he doesn't want to talk about it, because he knows it's not going to help him with whatever his goal is in making inroads into Mormonism.
Yeah, and whatever his goal is, it at least seems somewhat obvious that he is intentionally capitalizing on the Mormon people.
Yeah, Haven.
Yeah. In addition to, I think, avoiding the question, we saw this before. I mean, everybody does it. I feel like we can do it sometimes or at least feel like when we are getting criticism from people that it's because we're making a difference. And so there is truth to that, that whenever anything, you know, when good inroads are being made against evil people or evil systems, they will attack back. I think that's what happens when you see when women in the church just get a little bit more authority, or, you know, like they're up on the stand or they start talking about Heavenly Mother, then there's a consequence and kind of a lashback. But Michelle Sohn said this with the polygamy stuff, like the fact that we did an episode on it, that means they're winning, they're making waves, they're getting us scared, you know? And so, yeah, he did this too. But I just wanted to say that, I mean, first of all, anyone can say that, and I am going to say it right now, I guess, as something to consider in watching the next clip that we show of him, why he would feel it was necessary to speak the way he does about all of us. He mentions a few people, but he's really talking about anti-Mormons in general across the board, whether they're ex-mos or whether they're evangelicals, just all across the board. So. Yeah,
he has a particular he has a particular burr under his bonnet burr in his saddle for John Dillon and Mormon stories. And this guy says stuff that spells out cult with a capital C-U-L-T. And tell me if this guy is not practiced at attacking perceived enemies who disagree with him theologically.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets mad at the Apologia podcast and others that have been trying to point out to the Mormons that this guy is not who he claims to be. This guy has been in multiple high-demand fundamentalist religions. Most of the research that I did showed that he was in at least two other churches that would have been considered cults, but he spent the most time in the 12 tribes, and here is that other video.
Please share. The CES letter, Apologia, Mormon Stories, etc., exposed and destroyed. Are you watching anti-Mormon propaganda? Three letters to consider and nine questions to honestly ask yourself as you consider the communication you're listening to. Because many, many people in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints get sucked into listening to this garbage. And I don't mean to be harsh, but that's what it is. It's absolute garbage. I liken it to the corpse of a dead, rotting, stinking rat crawling with maggots, because it's just as repulsive, really. There's really nothing worse than plausible liars who think they're sincere,
projection,
calling light darkness and painting our Father's Zion as darkness and something evil and something to be avoided. And just to be honest, in a righteous way, I hate it.
Righteously.
Because that propaganda, that accusatory fog that paints the most beautiful thing on earth as something evil, and to those who tries to persuade those that are in the Ark of God that it's evil and to jump out. I mean, how's that for unwise? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead.
Bill, do you have the clip? I know you can't have every clip of all the entertainment that he has been giving for the last year since he joined the church, but did you have the clip where he takes the CES letter, which he's apparently printed out, and then looks at each chapter and then looks at it, and then he doesn't read it, reads just a word, and then smells it, says, "Oh, this stinks like a rat," and then wads it up and tears it up. And
I don't have it, but I'll try to get it ready for you.
He goes through the entire CES letter, ripping and tearing. He can't tear it all. He wads it up. There's a way. His idea is don't listen to anything that is put out by anybody who is questioning or critical of the church, because that's like eating a dead, stinking, rotten rat that is filled with maggots. Maggots. So you don't look at it, never, right? You just tear it up and throw it away. He's big on tearing things up and throwing away. The only thing he didn't do is light a match and set it to the corner. That's his idea. And this is cult with a capital C. This is what I was talking about, that you destroy writings. You don't look at them. You don't even consider them. You label them as something as abhorrent as you possibly can. Say you're never going to look at them while you're criticizing them for being absolutely wrong, and then encouraging and telling everybody else you don't want to look at this either, because that would be the same as if you ate a dead, rotten, stinking rat loaded with maggots.
Yeah. When you watch the videos where he talks about critics of the church and talks about this Apologia podcast, which is just a Christian podcast, and they've made an effort over the last few months to, from time to time, talk about what David's past is and point out that he's not who he claims to be. What David Alexander does across the board is he tells his viewers, don't go watch them. Just trust me. Don't go watch them. Don't listen to them. They're just full of crap. The reason he's doing that is because others are exposing the truth about who this guy is. He doesn't want his audience to figure it out. Folks, if you know anyone anywhere that is pointing to these videos, you're going to want to share Mormonism Lives episode where we lay out so cleanly who this guy was in the past. This is not a guy to be trusted. This is not a guy that you can say, I hate Mormonism. I think he is going to do the Mormon church an incredible disservice if they continue to have him as a face of Mormon conversion and somebody sort of catching the spirit and running with the ball after they get baptized.
Right. It looks like Maven found. Oh, go ahead, Maven.
I did. And while Bill's pulling it up, I just wanted to point out that, you know, with these kinds of criticisms, it's when you don't have anything.
Where would I pull it up from, Maven? Where would I get it?
I put it in the private chat.
Okay. Oh, I got you. Sweet. Thank you.
And it has the right timestamp. But when people don't have anything to go off of, it's always general things. They do this. They're evil. They lie, or whatever. But they never bring up examples. He doesn't bring up examples of anything concrete at all. And when we do stuff, when we're debunking like we're doing now, right now, I say we as if I really did a whole lot, but this has been mostly Bill and other contributors who are remaining anonymous. But we have
a little research.
We've got clips. We're we're showing what he says and responding to it, and he never does that. And I think that's something that shows, you know, your credibility or not. And in other places, I mean, his stuff's pretty wild, but he'll he'll just make these really outrageous claims about the kind of evil that we are and what we do. And there's another place where he claims that you know, the word of God is so clear, including in this video with these questions that he goes through and verses from the Bible, that, you know, when our evil lies are put up side to side with the truth, God wins hands down every time. And if that's the case, then why is he not willing to show the garbage to be able to show the obvious, you know, clean stuff or the delicious food that you would want to eat versus the stinking rat and make it clear to everybody that this is a stinking rat? But he doesn't do that. And I think there's a really good reason for that.
So. That's an excellent observation and a good point. Apparently now he's about ready to go to the temple to receive his endowment. And he's been broadcasting about that. I guarantee you, David, when you get to the endowment room at the end of the endowment and you do the prayer circle and you find out there's a circle with everybody in their robes, you're going to have a total orgasm, man.
He's going to love it. It's going to remind him of the peak days of the 12 tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here is that clip.
The communication of these anti-Latter-day Saint communication channels are. So, you know, I've been around dead, stinking, rotten rats when I worked in a restaurant that had a rat problem in this huge old brick building.
The Yellow Deli.
Would catch them on glue traps. And
you're right.
It was not at all uncommon to find one that we'd missed that had just rotted. And boy, you'd pick that thing up with a set of tongs and just...
The tongs you used to pull your hamburger off.
Look at it or breathe the air anywhere near that thing. And you just like...
I think I ate at that restaurant once.
Just put it in a double plastic bag and just run outside with it and just put it in the bin, put it in the garbage, put it in the commercial garbage and put other stuff on top of it. And it's just, and then you just felt like
you had to call the health department,
you know? So in any case, as the grand finale of this video, I actually printed out the CES letter. Okay. Now I'm not going to read through all this stuff again, obviously, but I'm just gonna, let's see. Okay, CES letter, here's the title page. Okay, not enough on the title page to judge it. Okay, let's see. Okay, the first chapter is about the Book of Mormon, and the second Book of Mormon translation. I'm just taking a glance. Oh man, I wish I had gloves on. Oh,
wish you had those hamburgers on.
Vision. Oh man. This just reeks. Just absolutely reeks.
He actually printed out the entire CES letter so he could wad it up.
Oh.
Never voicing any criticism that's made in it.
He's not reading it.
Polygamy. Okay. Let's see. Just let me take a glance. Gosh. It's not complicated. It's not complicated.
Pretty simple, actually.
See, at this point, I could go through the rest of it. But you know what?
He didn't go through any of it.
Jesus said very plainly, he said, you judge a tree by its fruit. He said, a good tree cannot bring forth bad fruit.
Unless you graft.
And a bad tree cannot bring forth good fruit. Therefore, by their fruits, you will know them. So, okay, this is translation claims, testimony, and spiritual witness. Okay. I've gone through like seven chapters. They all
speed reader. He's a speed crumpler.
It's a cesspool. It's like a cesspool of a putrid case built of believing the worst, selectively taking just garbage accusations and portraying them as truth, and trying to tear down the most beautiful thing on earth with bitterness and building a case against that which should be loved and admired, trying to tear down and paint as darkness and lies, the pillar and ground of the truth, the only thing on earth. It's the only arc. It's the only place on earth where you can actually genuinely know what's true, because we actually have living apostles and prophets, a council of them that are one, just as the Father and the Son are one. And together, they actually can sort stuff out. I don't have to figure it all out for myself and be the number 46,000 in first denomination of one. Okay.
I'm sold. How about you?
What do you think?
I'm sold. How about you?
Yeah, I somebody said he's a grifter, and that's what I think he is. I think he moved into Mormonism because he saw a vulnerable people, and he's taking advantage of them. And I think it's insane to that degree. But let me see if I can.
And you know, I'm still Mormon enough that pisses me off.
Yeah,
but you are the outlier. Way. You're the interloper coming into my fold, my church, and conning my people. And believe me, one con man is enough. You don't have to come in and be a con man for the people who are already being conned by other con men. The problem is that Mormons are, as a group of people, they are begging to be taken advantage of by people like David Alexander. And apparently it's working pretty well so far.
Yeah. I think, you know, people can call you and me whatever they want, but I think we're doing the church a favor tonight to get ahead of this before this guy starts to mount a following even bigger than he's got already. Just a note, folks, his YouTube channel does run ads at the beginning and the end. We do too, by the way, but his YouTube channel runs ads at the beginning and the end with about 19,000 subscribers to it. The amount of videos he puts out, I'm guessing he makes somewhere between maybe $10,000, $12,000 a year off of doing this. So there is that. So just to note that
somebody financed him to move from wherever he was. I think it was Australia at some point to the United States. And then from there, wherever he was, to Idaho, which is where he's been announcing that he even gave the name of a member of the church and his wife who financially assisted him in moving to Idaho. So he can be around a lot more Mormons that he can influence.
Yeah. So sort of wrapping up, I've got some questions for David. Number one, David, can you clearly, without going on a tirade, without losing your cool and claiming to have the Holy Ghost and then having a vein pop out of your neck while you express so much anger, can you just confirm clearly that you were a member of the 12 Tribes cult?
And we'll make it easy for you because we just proved that you were.
Yeah. Can you explain your promotion of child abuse within that system? Did you personally ever hit a child while in the 12 Tribes cult, strike them with one of these balloon sticks, as you and your discipline manual called it? How do you reconcile, David, being in a group that was famous for child abuse and you promoting it with your own standing up to the media to try to make it sound as if the 12 Tribes weren't doing anything wrong? How do you explain aligning with a highly racist religious group? How do you explain aligning with a highly homophobic religious group? Why did you avoid explaining clearly your religious past with specifics, with just how long you were in the 12 Tribes, how much you promoted them, and how much abuse they have caused while you were there? He has more subscribers than Jacob Hansen. That's hilarious. He'll have more than us probably another 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, he's on a roll.
There's one born every minute.
Yep. David, where were you? And I think we cleared this up maybe in the beginning of the show. So this one may not be necessary because I think he's going to say it's the Seventh-day Baptist. But where were you, an evangelical pastor? What year was that? And who could we confirm that with? Who could we talk to that you served alongside that could vouch for your character? How long in total were you in the 12 Tribes? Are you counting, and this, I mean, I have this worded the best, but are you counting the significant amount of time in several high-demand fundamentalist churches, including the 12 Tribes, as part of your 47 years in evangelism? And how many religions have you been a member of in total? By the way, folks, call-in studio is open. You can dial the number and do that. And so those are the questions I have for David.
By the way, the 47 years takes him back to when he was 22. So there's not that much time before that that he could have been a pastor of anything, I think.
Yeah. And then I've got three questions for the LDS Church. Number one, are you sure you know enough about David Alexander to have him be an up-and-coming voice for Mormonism? Number two, are you comfortable in this moment where the air is charged with Mormon abuse coming from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to have a man who came out of a highly documented child-abusing religious cult to be one of the faces of your faith? And number three, are you comfortable with his racist, anti-Semitic, homophobic, cult-hopping past as the face of Mormon conversion? So a note to him, I would think the LDS Church is going to have this man's bishop reach out to him and ask him to stop doing YouTube channels, because I think as bad as Mormonism is, with this guy's past, you would not want this guy gaining traction. I don't think. This guy seems like a grifter who's doing the same thing in Mormonism that he did for the 12 tribes.
I agree, absolutely. I just think that you're optimistic on what the church is going to do in response to it, but I hope you're right.
Yeah, we'll see. And then
if they care about their members,
yeah,
that's what they'll do.
If they are the gold standard, right. And then I just want to note to all the folks who have been promoting him and having him on, you probably should have taken a few minutes, did some research. It took me a little over a day to accumulate that. I had a little bit of help, no doubt. But there was enough on the internet that you could have found in 2 hours that you would have known that this guy is not who he claims to be, that he is avoiding intentionally about talking about what he used to do and who he used to belong to. So for all the groups that have had him on, you might want to do a follow-up and address the fact that you helped him represent himself falsely. And this is not the guy you want advocating for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I would hope on this we could all agree.
Yeah. And folks, there's the sources. I will put those in the YouTube notes. I will also put those in the podcast notes as well. So you can access those. And I didn't know really that much about this guy. Everybody was sort of screaming at us to cover it. We did. I think we did better than anyone else who's done it, showing that this guy is not who he claims to be.
I think you've done a wonderful job. And when I said I did do a little research, I meant a little research. Bill, this is all laud and honor and glory to you. You've done an incredible job. I know there were some people, there was a group of people who've done some research on this, in addition to what you've accessed and provided that to us, who did not want to be named or mentioned as part of this podcast. We will respect that. But I also wanted to acknowledge that, even if it was anonymously at their request, that there has been a group of people working on this. But you are the one who put the Alexander to the David, that you connected David Alexander of the 12 tribes as being the same David Alexander on these videos as a new Mormon.
Yeah. And there was four or five people who had made major contributions to this research. Thank you very much. One of them was the David, the different David, not David Alexander, the David that was in the chat that had asked him the question. He helped point me to Sinasta, I think, or Sinasta, whatever the gentleman's. Yeah, Sinasta. He helped point me to him. And then I reached out to Sinasta and asked him the question. And then there were other folks in the background that had been working on this for quite a while that sort of got us off on the right track to begin with. So thank you very much. David Alexander, otherwise known as David Darush, is a cult hopping, child abuse advocating, and I'll just say it, seems to be a crazy guy who is using manipulation and obfuscation to present himself in a way as to not really tell his audience who he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he will watch this. And David, I hope you're watching this, but I'm going to tell you right now what you're going to do. Okay. What you're going to do is you're going to hop on your YouTube channel. You're not going to play any of the facts that we have mentioned. You're not going to play any clips about any of the facts that we've mentioned that show that you're flying under a false flag. And you're going to talk about how you're being attacked again. And you're going to laugh and do that crazy laugh kind of thing that you do and play it off, showing that because you're being exposed for who you really are, that means that you're on God's side, because Christ said that his righteous disciples would be persecuted.
You nailed it. That's exactly what he's going to do. He'll do one more thing too. He'll tell his audience to not go watch Mormon Discussions video because he will not want them to have any part or parcel of what we just showed on the screen.
I felt like, you know, when you're playing that 6 to 7 minute clip of him obfuscating, I felt like taking a balloon stick to his bare bottom and just whacking on him until he finally answered the freaking question. He needs to be brought into compliance. You're disobedient, David.
Yeah. He could use a balloon stick or two, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
All right, folks, let's go to the phone lines. We've got two calls there.
Hope it's David.
Yep. Let me... Caller, what's the name?
Simona.
Okay. You're on Mormonism Morning. Live. What?
Hi, Bill. Hi, Arvin.
Hi.
Good. I just wanted to make a comment because that guy is so scary. Remind me of two converts that they were in my ward a few years ago, and one turned to be a child abuser, child molester, and then the other one also abused a nice woman. So by false pretenses, and I always felt very, I don't like when a new convert is like within 2 weeks, sometimes even 3 weeks, they give him the priesthood. They give them, I mean, go from their only priesthood to the Melchizedek priesthood. And of course, these people are like really good actors because they share their testimony every month. And they make people believe that they're really good people. So people start trusting them and opening their homes to them. And then it doesn't take very long for them to start acting who they really are. And by then, there are victims in the process. Mm. And I think that this program is really great. I mean, people in the church or out of the church, they need to be aware about these kind of people. Because like you say, sadly, in general, the LDS people are very nice people and they're very vulnerable because they are told, they were told them, we need to welcome all those new members, open our arms, you know? Mm-hmm. And sadly, yeah, we do that, but we have to be very careful with everything that is going on now. We cannot put our trust blindly on those people, even if they go and cry and share their testimonies every month.
Yes.
You know, so I thank you so much for exposing this man.
Yeah.
You are welcome. And thank you for watching. Thank you for your words. I'm glad that it's helped at least with you, Simona. I hope it will help with others. My unfortunate expectation is that this program, even if the information does get to the members of the church around him in Idaho, will probably not make a dent in his popularity. Yeah. But maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, let's hope so. This guy sort of is appealing to the believer who just wants to feel an emotion and not really deal with the problems. And he very quickly joins Mormonism and knows how to articulate in a way that he gains some traction. He's had a ton of experience doing this in multiple high demand fundamentalist religions.
And the crazy thing is, it's not actually logical. It's quite emotional. But a guy who's been a pastor, evangelical pastor for 47 years, who realizes that's wrong and joins Mormonism, he's going to be a hero automatically in the Mormon
church. He knew that. Yeah, he knew that the way he framed who he was dishonest, but he knew that it would work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it has.
Yeah.
But hopefully it won't so much anymore.
Yeah. Okay, I think the next caller is Walt. We could take one more call if somebody calls while Walt's talking. Walt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're on Mormonism. How are you doing? My friend. Really good.
Great, thanks. I had a quick question. I think it was at the beginning of the that longer clip that you played. It sounded like David Alexander referred to Mormon Discussion. I think he called it a Mormon Stories clone, but either way, it sounded like there was already something, like there had been someone brought up you guys to him already. Is that true?
So in, I think, last week's episode, when we got towards the end of the show, somebody put into the comments of the show during the live show that they wished that we would talk about this guy and go into who this person is. And so he was just noting that as he was reading the question from somebody, that question came from that show, which makes me think he's already watching us.
And we have had this advertised for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, but really his focus, as far as I can tell, I haven't listened to hardly everything that he's put out. I've listened to some, but it's been on Mormon stories. But you're right, it did mention Mormon discussions there.
Yeah. And I think it was our Mormonism live show last week that in the live chat, and it might have been the news program, but in the live chat of one of our shows in the past 7 days, somebody asked us to do an expose on this guy, and that's what he was referring to. Okay.
I see. Well, thank you for all you guys do. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Walt. Thanks for watching.
RFM, anything else from you, my friend?
No, no, but this has been a great show, and I look forward to seeing what happens as a result.
And we did just now get one more caller. Do you mind if we take it?
Only if it's David.
It is. I don't think it is, but it says Cheryl David Alexander. So let's see if hopefully.
No way.
Well, I think she just wants to talk about him, but let's see what happens here. So
maybe it's a former wife.
Maybe, maybe not. Cheryl, is that you?
It is me. I'm sorry if I was confusing. I'm Cheryl Taylor. Wanted to talk about David Alexander. Kind of feel real. Had it right.
Yeah.
Actually, this is kind of interesting. It ties into a couple weeks ago, I joined in late on the show, and it was about President Heinze waiting way too long to report the abuse that this bishop had confessed to him. And I had called in and wanted to know if he was a bishop at the time, but I didn't get to finish the call. And it turns out my point to that was I grew up in the church. I'm no longer in the church, had my name removed and everything. But in my faith deconstruction, when you're not standing in the forest and you're looking back, you go, my gosh, I believed all of these callings came from God growing up because that was what's ingrained in your brain. Fast forward to today when I watch this show tonight, and I'm literally watching it and my palms are sweating. It's just like making me, I'm just so bothered by it because anybody like Bill Real, I think you said he was like a serial, basically just a cult hopper, right?
Yep.
And they come into the church and he's doing these YouTube videos and talking about his priesthood authority and this and that and the other. And once again, he could be called into bishop or a counselor or an elders quorum president. And people take these people to be literally like a steward over these people in the ward. Like they are almost like the spokesperson for God for that ward. And it makes me hope that if there are TBMs watching, that it causes them to reflect like it did on myself about how much people can be fooled and think so strongly they're feeling the spirit and this is coming from the Lord and this man is speaking for God, or whether it's in your local leaders or all the way up to the top, it doesn't matter. But watching this man who's clearly has severe mental issues. And it makes me just go back to think, my gosh, these are the same people that people in the church and probably lots of churches, but particularly in the LDS church, just look up to as if they're practically ready to walk on water. And it's almost disgusting. And it's infuriating because you want to be able to jump up to people that you know and say, stop, step out of the forest, look back at the forest and go, this isn't right. This isn't right. But they're just a person. And like most of the people don't know that this man's background. I had seen him float around the internet, hadn't paid it much attention. But when I hopped on here tonight a little bit late, it really grabbed my attention because like, oh, I want to hear about this. I wish more people would do that. And I really cannot thank you to enough. You have no idea the impact you've had on my deconstruction and rethinking things and things, seeing things through a different lens and how helpful you've been to help me know during the process, you go back to that, oh, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? And every day I would find out, I learned more and more. And you guys have been a hugest part of that. And I just wanted to say thanks.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Cheryl.
In a church that has the Holy Ghost, in a church that has discernment it seems pretty easy to fool the LDS people, doesn't it? Anything else from you, RFM?
No, that's it. I think I've already run you up the flagpole and saluted you more than once, so I'll not do it again. But what a great show that you have put together, Bill. Thanks so much for doing that. It was a heck of a ride. And once again, I look forward to seeing what happens as a result of this show. I hope the word gets out from here. This guy, David Alexander, is a person you need to keep your eyes on. And I don't mean that in a good way.
Yeah. Sayonara, David Alexander.
Give Brother Joseph a break.
Give Brother David a break.